Yeah, that's fine.
First of all, let me thank Ilya for the generous introduction, and his slides about me are better than any slides I use about myself.
Прежде всего, позвольте поприветствовать собравшуюся публику, поблагодарить Илью Теодоровича за вот эту презентацию, за информацию обо мне.
Okay, so I'm being translated simultaneously, more or less. Okay, I'll try to be slow and simple about this. And I want to thank the organizers for inviting me here.
Поблагодарить организаторов за приглашение меня.
Okay, so the title of my talk is Does Science Need Public Relations? And just to cut to the chase, the answer is yes. And so I'm going to explain. So just in case you fall asleep in the middle of the talk and so forth, you at least know what the punchline is. The answer is yes.
Собственно, название моей сегодняшней лекции, да, нуждается ли наука в общественных отношениях, в пиар, да, и вот хотелось бы поговорить об этом, да.
Okay, so the key kind of distinction that grounds the talk is between the idea of the customer and the consumer, okay? And the customer
is okay. Различие, да, это различие между покупателем и продавцом. Я позволю без микрофона, потому что клиент.
Okay. The customer is the person who you sell something to. The consumer is someone who actually uses the product.
Соответственно, тот, кто потребитель, да, он использует продукт, а тот, кто продавец, да, тот...
Okay. When you go to a shop, okay, you can buy something. You can buy something for the purpose of actually using it yourself, or perhaps for the purpose of giving it to someone else or selling it. And that's the difference between a customer and a consumer. A customer is someone who buys the thing but doesn't necessarily use it, whereas the consumer uses it. Okay?
Собственно, вот проясняется, да, клиент и потребитель, да, значит, когда вы что-то покупаете, вы покупаете для себя. И вот это...
Когда вы покупаете, вы можете потом передать это другому. И тот, кто потребил, это не тот же самый, кто купил. То есть здесь есть разница.
Oh, dear. Okay, so you get it. Okay. Because that's very important because... Are you ready? Okay. No. He's ready because he's going to do some translating. You're okay. Okay. So the idea here is this is how you need to think about science, especially as it's taught. Okay? In other words, people are customers for science. More people than ever before have been taught science. Okay? But how they use it, right, may not be as the people who sell it to them intended. Can you?
Значит, идея в том, что сейчас вот эти customer, покупатели науки, это, так сказать, очень широкий круг людей, которым этому учат науки, в школе и так далее. Но вот кто действительно ее употребляет и как, может вообще не совпадать с той идеей тех продавцов, которые нам продавали. То есть мы можем употреблять эту науку не так, как
okay? This reflects a sort of a general distinction that is being drawn in society today, and that is
наука как поиск и наука как авторитет, как власть.
Okay, so the idea here is that people are happy to accept science as a form of inquiry. And so they're willing to learn it, you know, to understand it, and so forth. But what they're not willing to do is necessarily accept it as a form of authority, which is to say, to believe it in some deep sense. Yes, and I mean, Ilya mentioned my latest stuff on post-truth. This is related to this, actually. This is related to post-truth. Okay? Because what I think is happening today is people have, they're getting a kind of meta-level awareness of science. In other words, they're willing to have a different, they're willing to understand science, but then judge it differently from the way the scientists do. Okay. And it's here. It's here where the public relations matter, because scientists cannot assume that what they say will just be taken as authority and that people will automatically believe it, because people are adopting a different standpoint. They can think about it independently of the scientists themselves.
Предположение о том, что люди просто поверят науке, примут ее как некий авторитет, власть, оно не работает. У них там свои идеи, у людей, и поэтому нужно с ними, так сказать, иметь дело, объяснять отношения.
And here, I think we need to talk about the internet.
Тут мы должны говорить об интернете.
I mean, if you look at things, so for example, New Age medicine. Creationism in biology. When I was a student, these things were thought to be dead. But they have been revived. They have been resurrected. And it's not because people have thought of themselves as rejecting science, but because they have reinterpreted the science. And this is the challenge of public relations for the scientific community, especially the scientific establishment. And in a way, one should see this as a kind of triumph of democratization. This is what democracy actually means in the epistemic realm.
И на это можно посмотреть как на процесс демократизации науки, поскольку в отношении эпистемической области демократия означает именно это, то есть способность людей вне науки что-то судить о науке и не подчиняться слепо.
So I don't see this phenomenon going away soon. In fact, insofar as democratization is increasing, we're likely to see more of this, and this is why scientists should think more openly and more explicitly about the public relations functions of their knowledge. In addition, as we know, more and more people are being trained in scientific fields, broadly speaking, but there are fewer and fewer jobs available within academic structures. So in fact, we are actually creating the conditions for this increased democratization.
Да, он говорит о том, что больше и больше число людей получают научное образование, при этом количество рабочих мест в науке, в академических институтах не увеличивается. И поэтому вот мы будем иметь дело с подобными феноменами, как бы не академической науки, все более в большей степени.
So, just to be clear, what I mean here is that people who are very academically trained nevertheless will not find jobs, will not get any support from the academy, and so in a sense, they are left to sort of provide a kind of independent basis for putting forward their knowledge in a persuasive manner. And this is going to increase the kind of trend I'm talking about.
Не получат работы в академических структурах или в поддержке финансовых каких-то институтов, которые дают гранты, и значит, они будут вынуждены каким-то образом что-то делать с этими знаниями вне академии, и, собственно, это, по мнению Стива, только усилит вот те тенденции, которые он сейчас описывает.
And so the question then becomes, how does science respond to this in an official capacity? Right? Whether science treats this development as the enemy or as something it can work with.
Ну вот, если вопрос в том, как к этому отнесется наука с точки зрения ее, так сказать, официальных представителей, либо считать вот эти движения враждебными, либо как-то с ними сотрудничать.
Now for historical precedent, the Protestant Reformation.
Да, ну в качестве некоторого исторического прецедента похожего явления Стив указывает на протестантскую реформацию. Ну, собственно, почему? Просто реформация.
The idea here is that the Protestant Reformation was the first period within Christianity where, in fact, the religion, the thing that legitimated everything, was actually open to people who could read the Bible for themselves and then make their own judgments about it.
Параллель, естественно, в том, что следствием, да, содержанием реформации было то, что простые люди, так сказать, не облаченные, так сказать, какими-то должностями в церковных иерархиях, получили возможность читать священные тексты и выносить свои суждения на, так сказать, богословские темы.
And this had a lot of very important effects. First of all, this is generally regarded as the first period of democratization in a general sense. But it also led to an enormous amount of conflict, including about a century of warfare within Europe. And that was because, of course, all of these people, and I think this applies today with regard to science, claim to actually believe in the same God, right, believe in the same fundamental ideas, but at the same time differ very substantially on how those things should be interpreted and implied in particular situations.
Но это происходило потому, что все эти люди утверждали, что они верят в одно и того же Бога и принимают те же самые общие принципы, но на самом деле они очень по-разному интерпретировали то, каким образом это должно применяться в конкретных ситуациях.
And I think this is the framework within which I think the scientific establishment needs to see the challenges facing it today.
Ну, говорит Стив, вот научное сообщество должно по аналогичной модели рассматривать вот этот вызов.
One of the consequences of the Protestant Reformation was the separation of church and state. Well, we might need to see a separation of science and state. And this will have very interesting, and I think very difficult consequences for people. But But as you know, I mean, you know about the history of the Protestant Reformation this year. Yes, exactly. The 500th anniversary of Martin Luther nailing the theses, right, on the church. But the thing that's interesting about over those 500 years is, of course, we still have the Roman Catholic Church. So Protestantism didn't destroy the Catholic Church, but it obviously opened up the space of Christianity and opened up the door to secularism. And I think, in a sense, for science to survive in its kind of established form that we're used to, it's got to sort of think about things kind of from the standpoint of the Roman Catholic Church facing the Reformation. Now, I don't know how much you know about my personal background, but before I went to university, I was trained by the Jesuits.
Перед тем, как Стив попал в университет, он учился у иезуитов.
Yes, and the Jesuits were an order of the Catholic Church that was established specifically to deal with the Protestant Reformation.
И этот орден, иезуитский орден, был создан католической церковью специально для того, чтобы выяснить отношения с протестантами. Ну, выяснить отношения надо ведь не самым мерзким образом.
And they did the job well. And an important part of what they did was basically to show how, in fact, one could stay within the church and yet accept different points of view. I mean, this was the thing about the Jesuits. They were sort of, pluralistic. They were kind of open-minded, and they believed that people could stay within the church even if they had different views on how to interpret things.
Ну, они сделали, по мнению Стива, хорошую работу в том, что они показали, каким образом можно, оставаясь в церкви, иметь разные точки зрения на разные вопросы.
And this is, I actually think this is a very challenging thing for the scientific community, because what it means is actually that the scientific establishment has to deal more directly with what is actually of concern to people when they read and understand science and try to relate it to their lives.
Стив считает, что этот опыт может быть использован учеными академическими в отношении тех людей, которые озабочены наукой и вне академии, и тем, как наука влияет на их жизнь.
And so one of the things about the Jesuits that's very important is they actually traveled a lot. They were like campaigners. They did exactly what the Protestants did, because the Protestants invented this idea of evangelism, where you actually go out and you try to get people to believe in a certain way. And the Jesuits actually imitated that mode for the first time. It wasn't people who believe coming into the church, but rather the church going out to them and trying to appeal. And that's the thing I think the scientific community needs to do more explicitly.
В этом, как говорит Стив, они подражали, следовали евангелистам, которые работали на протестантской церкви. Вот, это, и Стив утверждает, что наука должна следовать вот этому образцу и как бы идти в народные массы, если так
интерпретировать. Yeah, yeah. Now, I would say that there is an obstacle within the scientific establishment for doing what I'm talking about. There is an obstacle. And this has a lot to do with the way in which teaching and research are put in opposition to each other. Okay. Okay? I mean, the problem being that in the university, let's say we in the university who are interested in training people who are going to be scientifically competent are primarily training people in research competence, not in teaching competence. Teaching involves reaching out beyond the people who are interested in research. It involves reaching out to people who will never do research. Okay, let me continue.
Now, teaching is more for preparing for research and not for preparing for teaching.
Well, that's right. That's right. Yes, I mean, in fact, at least in the educational systems that I'm familiar with, teaching is in fact not regarded very highly at all, frankly, especially if you're supposed to be intelligent. I mean, because part of the underlying, you might say, sociological dynamic of what I'm talking about is that we're actually not going to need more researchers, but we will need people who are scientifically informed and literate and understand science. And that's the challenge for the scientific community.
У нас сокращается число вот этих рабочих мест для исследователей, то мы скорее должны, но при этом нам нужно много учителей. Поэтому, вот по мнению Стива, нам нужно переориентироваться и готовить больше учителей, а не исследователей.
In order to make research, so we, in a sense, the challenge is, from the academic standpoint, make research teachable. That is to say, put research in a form that students not only understand, but find attractive.
С академической точки зрения задача стоит в том, чтобы сделать исследования такими, чтобы можно было их выучить, и чтобы они были, результаты исследований были привлекательны.
And if you, again, think about Protestantism, think about the evangelical function of Protestantism. It is about reaching out to people's lives, right, and connecting it with the Bible. That's what they're always doing. Why can't scientists do the same thing?
Ну вот опять Стив использует модель евангелистов. Идея евангелистов в том, что они приходят простым людям и связывают их жизнь там с церковью. И говорит, почему бы науке не сделать то же самое?
And see, this is the sense of public relations that I'm talking about. It's an idea of breaking down the barrier that exists, which is largely created on the academic side, because the popular side is actually interested in science, but the academic side, in a way, is inhibiting that connection.
Академическими институтами и широкой публики, который, как говорит Стив, создан именно со стороны академических институтов, поскольку публика заинтересована в том, чтобы изучать науку.
Now, I understand this is difficult.
Да, теперь я понимаю, что это трудно.
And the main reason I think it's difficult, well, there are two reasons. One reason I think actually academics may not be able to do this.
Исследователи просто не способна на такое дело.
Thorstein Veblen, the economist, talked about learned incapacity, and that if you're an academic, you sort of learn how not to communicate with ordinary people.
Освальд Веблен, экономист и математик, тоже называл это выученной невозможностью.
So that's a problem. That is part of the actual training of the academics.
Это проблема обучения академических работников. Ну да, учатся не умеют это делать.
But there is also a I think in a way the bigger problem, which is of course the issue of authority, and what happens when you make your knowledge more generally available, and you demystify, you self demystify, what happens then?
Ну, еще проблема возникает с вот этим авторитетом, властью, потому что здесь есть проблема, что мы как бы таким образом демистифицируем.
Right, because so much of the authority of academic knowledge, right, comes from the jargon, comes from all of the degrees, the awards, all the things that end up producing a barrier. Even though it impresses people, it also creates a wall.
Ну, дело в том, что вот это authority, по-русски у нас нет абсолютно точного слова. Нет, это власть, авторитет. Ну как, authority, как в городе, это вот полицейский главный, да? Что вот большая вот это вот качество, скажем так, науки, которое составляет вот эту способность властвовать, как раз основано на том, что науки свой жаргон, там вот эти дипломы, которые они выдают, да, и это с одной стороны дает вот некий ореол, который люди вроде начинают уважать, но с другой стороны, конечно, создает барьер.
So much of the authority of academic forms of scientific knowledge are based on what economists call path dependency.
Очень много из этой способности властвовать зависит от зависимости от пути, экономический термин.
Path dependency is the idea that in order to understand something, you have to go through a certain path, right? You have to have read this author, that author, right? You have to reproduce the learning process of all the predecessors.
Зависимость пути означает утверждение о том, чтобы нечто понять, ты должен пройти некий путь, то есть прочитать те книжки, те, и пока ты этого не сделал, ты не понял. Обязательно условие.
One of the democratizing effects of the internet is to undercut path dependency by enabling people to have different ways to get into the same form of knowledge without having been taught in a certain pattern.
Вот интернет дает возможность людям осваивать определенные вещи, не проходя, как-то обходя, идя другими путями.
And I would say this is a very threatening feature to academic knowledge as a form of authority.
И это такой угрожающий момент для академических институтов как формы власти.
And if the academy is going to reproduce itself as a form of authority with regard to scientific knowledge, it really does need to take this phenomenon into account in terms of how it legitimizes itself.
Если академия хочет себя воспроизводить, она должна обязательно принять во внимание вот этот феномен и что-то с ним сделать.
Now, at the moment, again, this is very difficult. This is a problem.
Это все очень сложно. Это проблема.
And you know, the Science Citation Index is the enemy.
Да. И враг этот научный индекс цитирования.
Because this is the codification of path dependency.
Поскольку это кодификация вот этой зависимости от пути.
And so, in a sense, what you know, the university has to kind of distinguish itself from this kind of activity. And that's the tricky part. That is the really difficult part.
Which kind of activity do you mean?
The reliance on the Science Citation Index as a form of authority.
Ну, Стивтердаш университеты должны отделить как бы себя от использования вот такого рода инструментов как формы власти.
again, this is not easy. But it seems to me that in the end, while something like citations actually legitimize academics maybe to the state, to various authority structures, it does nothing at the general popular level. Now, what I would suggest, in a sense, because look, as I think Ilya indicated, I am someone who is very pro-university, okay? I am very pro-university. I am very interested in the academic establishment surviving, okay?
Стив говорит, что при всем при этом он, так сказать, сторонник и защитник университетов, академических институтов, то есть вся эта критика не означает, что так сказать, надо уничтожить, он очень заинтересован, чтобы они выжили, но...
But it the university needs to recover the classical modern mission, the Humboldtian model.
Но университеты должны вернуться к вот этой гумбольдтовской миссии.
Right, which is the unity of teaching and research. And I have a particular way of understanding this which addresses this question here. It starts by recognizing that all research is elite in the beginning, if you're coming up with a new form of knowledge. That is true. When you come up with a new piece of research, so something that's actually published in a journal, right, that is actually elite in the sense that relatively few people can actually understand it in the beginning. And this is where teaching matters, because teaching is the process by which you take that knowledge that was formed in a very elite circumstance and make it more generally available to people who do not have your background, who may not be interested in carrying forward the research, but who you believe need to know about this in some way. And this, in fact, it seems to me, is something that only universities can do. So this is actually a kind of unique function at an institutional level of what a university can do, is to actually make the research more generally available than it would be otherwise through the teaching process. And I put the matter this way because I do think that there is also going to be a question about what is unique about universities. Because at the moment, we have many other sorts of non-university institutions who, on the one hand, can produce research of a certain sort for clients, and on the other, can provide training for particular jobs and things. And both of these things are non-university. So why do you need a university? And so the point that I would bring to you is that the key function of the university is to actually translate elite forms of research through teaching to a more democratic mode of understanding in society. And that is a very clear function for the university.
Ну, и, как говорит Стив, функция университета состоит в том, что, чтобы вот это элитарное исследование сделать доступным для более широкой публики.
And this would not... So the point is that the kind of skills that are required of the academician in the university should not be so exclusively or heavily biased on doing original research.
Ну и поэтому Стив считает, что как это называется, навыки университетского работника не должны быть только таким образом сконцентрированы на исследовании, а также, так сказать, должны включать в себя преподавание.
Now, I understand that, again, this is very difficult for people to accept. Maybe not in the audience, but certainly for administrators and so forth to accept.
Стив говорит, что это очень трудно принять, может быть, не для слушателей, но для администрации. But not in Russia.
But I do think that if we're talking about the survival of academic forms of knowledge through the university, in a distinctive kind of way, then this is what we're talking about. We're talking about democratization, which is part of what the university in its modern Humboldtian form has been about.
Ну, то есть, вот, для Стива шанс и способ сохранить академию, в смысле университеты, как раз состоит в том, чтобы усилить их вот эту демократизирующую функцию.
And so I will conclude by just going back to the beginning here, all right, where I made this distinction between the customer and the consumer of knowledge. Let's go back to that.
Вернуться к этому различию между клиентом или покупателем и потребителем.
Because what we are producing in the university are customers for knowledge, right? They are the ones who, they buy the knowledge. They think it's important, that's why they're at the university. But how they use it, it's up to us to, as it were, make it as usable as possible for them. So they consume it in whatever way they see fit, but they see the knowledge as being valuable.
То есть наши студенты — это покупатели, которые покупают знания, так сказать, в университете, но дальше они могут их использовать самыми разными способами, и наша задача как преподавателей университетских, академиков, состоит в том, чтобы это можно было делать как можно проще.
And I think where the issues, in terms of where I think there is some interesting kind of disagreement that we could have on this, is over the issue of path dependency. In other words, to what extent do students need to reproduce the way in which we as academics come to understand things in order to have an acceptable understanding for themselves.
Но он говорит, что как раз спорный момент всего этого подхода в этом понятии, в зависимости пути, поскольку, ну, вот это действительно вопрос, насколько можно изучить какие-то научные результаты, не проходя каких-то шагов, которые с академической точки зрения являются необходимыми.
Now, I have to say, I will conclude on this point, that here there are some interesting distinction between the natural versus the human sciences on path dependency.
Есть разные, вот эта зависимость пути по-разному устроена в случае естественных и гуманитарных наук.
People who understand, who know the natural sciences, generally know nothing about how the knowledge was produced. They know nothing of the history. And that doesn't seem to trouble them very much.
Обычно ученые в естественных науках почти ничего не знают о том, как эта наука, как была, возникла, произведена, ничего не знают об истории науки. И, похоже, это не особо волнует.
Whereas those of us in the human sciences, and I include myself, our knowledge almost entirely consists of knowing the history.
Тогда как в гуманитарных науках, включая науку, которой занимается Стив, наше знание чуть ли не полностью состоит из знания истории.
And so this is a kind of interesting contrast, I would say.
Это интересный контраст.
Insofar as we are interested in making our knowledge more generally available, there is...
Поскольку мы заинтересованы в том, чтобы сделать знания более доступными,
we need perhaps to take a somewhat more self-critical view of how much of the history, how much do the people of the future have to reproduce the past before they move forward.
Да, мы должны как-то критически к этому относиться и еще раз подумать о том, надо ли, допустим, людям в будущем знать так много прошлого, чтобы вообще сделать следующий шаг вперед.
And I'll stop here.
Да, и на этом все.
Thank you very much. Cool. We have time for questions, yeah. Come on, there must be questions. Ah! You can give him the microphone.
Стив умер, обладает совершенно колоссальным опытом, знаниями и так далее. Но вот если ему задать вопрос, например, может ли он сформулировать три основных идеи, которые он считает главными для себя в своей работе и так далее.
So what do you say?
The question is, given all your background and stuff, could you formulate three main ideas which you believe are most important?
Well, the first idea is that you should learn academic knowledge, but it doesn't follow that you have to believe everything you learn, right? There is that distinction.
Первая идея в том, что вы должны изучать академическое знание, но не обязательно должны верить всему, чему вы изучаете.
And the second idea is that actually academics need to learn this point because they sort of assume the two are the same. And it seems to me that the future of academic knowledge is going to be in being able to translate the kind of authoritative knowledge we have into something that people can actually use. That is basically the challenge.
И третье, то, что, как он считает, академические исследователи, университетские профессора должны научиться передавать свои знания более широким публике.
Let me add something. Because with the internet, there are alternative sources of knowledge. The academics don't have a monopoly on this.
Поскольку интернет дает другие источники знаний,
okay. Ah, lots of questions. Okay. Just hand him the microphone.
Сейчас сравним, допустим, говорят, что Макдональдс, по сравнению с Макдональдсом, университет — это dumb organization, глупая организация, в буквальном смысле, переводе по-русски. Имеется в виду то, что в университете собираются умные люди, но выход... Говорят, что по сравнению с Макдональдсом университет — это dumb organization.
Some people say that comparing with McDonald's, university is a damp organization.
Dumb, yes, that's right. I've spoken about this.
Yeah.
Yes, I've spoken about this issue.
In your title, was supposed that science is exchangeable for university.
Yeah, to a certain extent. To a certain extent.
Но не получается ли, что вот public relations заставит, трансформироваться науку не в университет, а в что-то другое?
Wouldn't be the case that public relations
make science, would transform science into something different, not into university science, not to academic science, but some different sort of science. Yeah.
It's not clear, but if I can address the opening, this issue about universities as dumb organizations, if we can, because I think you made a very... Because I have actually written on this, just in case you're, I don't know if you're familiar with this kind of way of thinking about universities, but the idea is... So the idea is the university is full of all of these intelligent people, but when you put them together, you end up getting less. The whole is less than the sum of the parts. It's not greater than the sum of the parts. Yes, no. In fact, I published a book 15 years ago called Knowledge Management Foundations, which I thought this was the fundamental challenge to universities in terms of existing in the future. So you're absolutely right. So that is the problem in a sense. And so the question then becomes, what is it that you have universities do? And to go to the other point about whether if science gets engaged in public relations, will it change into something else? It seems to me that the very specialized way in which we do science, where we worry about citation counts and all this path dependency stuff, is really a product primarily of post-World War II. It isn't really part of the entire history of science. It is really, I would say, a Cold War and afterwards kind of phenomenon. So science doesn't necessarily need to be so specialized by definition. I mean, historically it wasn't before, let's say,
1945.
Yeah, so I do think there is an issue here about how we think about the university and academics as very distinctive producers of knowledge. I think that's kind of what's on the table here about the distinctiveness of academics, because of course science could be produced outside the university. Again, when I think about this, I talk about the idea of science as a public good, because science, by definition, is not necessarily a public good. It has to be made into a public good. It has to be made into a public good. And how is it made into a public good? It is actually through teaching. It is not through research, it's through teaching. Sure, go ahead. There are some other questions. There are two questions. But okay. Well, but we'll get to you. We'll get to you.
I'll ask you.
Yeah.
Спасибо. У меня такой вопрос. Современное научное знание направлено не только в прошлое, но и в будущее. Оно в себе не будет принципно содержит. Если мы можем демократизировать наше знание о прошлом, то в какой степени мы можем демократизировать наше знание о будущем, во многом базирующееся на воображении?
The question is that science in general somehow deals not only with the past, but also with future.
Yes.
And that is based on imagination.
Yes.
And the question was how would democratization affect that aspect of science, which has to do with future and with imagined future?
Well, I actually think that, here's the point, right? If you look at stuff like New Age medicine or whatever, these sort of alternative sciences typically want to break with the past of the scientific establishment, okay? So one of the things, that's common to what often gets called anti or pseudoscience is a kind of openness to different directions on which the same scientific knowledge could be taken. So it just doesn't reproduce the past. I mean, to give you an example, okay, as I think was mentioned in the introduction, so I'm involved a lot with transhumanism, okay? So transhumanism thinks of itself as very pro-science, right? But it's taking things in directions that the scientific establishment has problems with, right? Don't necessarily believe it's going to happen and so forth. Now, to my mind, what is the issue here? What is the problem exactly? You know, in other words, why can't transhumanism be legitimate? You see? Because that's an example of a very imaginative use of science and technology trying to push society in a certain direction. Why isn't that not a good way to use science and technology? Now this, she had a question, yes.
Спасибо большое. У меня вопрос к аналогии. Меня очень смущает аналогия с католической и протестантской церковью. Все-таки...
Okay, good, okay.
Все-таки то, что они обе выжили, это была объективная необходимость. Люди убивали друг друга в религиозных войнах, Европа была опустошена.
Религиозные войны. Католики, еноты порезали друг друга. И поэтому им нужно было помириться, чтобы выжить.
Just made a pressure of some sort of reconciliation, which was done just in order to survive.
Надо ли теперь, используя эту аналогию, настоящим ученым вступить в смертельную схватку с лжеучеными, чтобы потом прийти к какому-то консенсусу?
So if we follow that pattern, right, they should be just war in the beginning and later probably.
Well, yes, I guess I do think that, yes. I do think we are heading into a period where there will be enormous conflict and tension, and I think the issue is going to be whether the academic establishment responds in an intelligent way to it. But I do think it's very vulnerable, and this is why there are lessons to learn from the Catholic Church, from the Jesuits, from those kinds of people, in order if the establishment wants to survive. But it will survive, as Christianity has, with other religions, other sects, other, you know, all these Protestants are around, they're considered Christians, and there's a kind of peaceful coexistence, more or less, between them. And I think that's where we're heading. That's where we're heading. This is just the beginning. This is just 2017 is 1517. There's another 100 years to go on this. back here. Well, the universities actually ought to encourage academics to do this. And I mean encourage in a substantive way, rewarding them. I mean, this is the problem. I mean, the problem is the academic reward system doesn't actually enable this process to happen. Other questions? Okay, you want, yeah, go ahead. Sure, go ahead.
The first thing just that we may discuss is actually some things that are really stressed look a little bit differently in that local context.
Okay, sure.
Research, teaching, and so on. But my more general question is, look, you basically describe science as kind of anti-democratic institution, right? Like based on authority, and you oppose the democratization.
Yes.
I'm not fully convinced, because I think, with the understanding your reasons, exactly, but I think there is something like democratic dimension within science itself, which may be more important than in many sects like New Age. You see what I mean? That they say appeal to authority, of course it does exist in science, right? But at least since Bacon, that is not looked as properly scientific. Right? Properly scientific,
yes.
Think that everybody, every user or customers or
customer, actually, yes, customer.
Consumer, right? Even consumer should really do everything for himself and himself, right?
Well, that's why I believe in Popper. No. But that's why I'm a Popperian, right? So my I agree with you as a kind of principle, and in fact, the principle that you're talking about is actually the one that I'm trying to uphold. So what I'm complaining about, very much like Martin Luther, I'm complaining about the institution of science rather than the spirit.
But also about research versus teaching, because I think the same thing. I'm not really convinced that, say, research is the elite, as you put it, highbrow thing, and then teaching. Because there are things like crowdfunding.
Crowdsourcing?
Yeah, for example. So,
is that it?
Let him just stop now because the party.